It seems a little ironic to me, and it, before I say any more, it certainly wasn't planned this way. But it seems a little ironic that on the week we begin a new season of midweek studies and home group studies, the lectionary gospel text for this Sunday ends with the words, "You cannot serve both God and money." In a period leading up to Advent where it seems everything that we're doing is either linked to mission or to money, it seems a little ironic that we come to this passage. But I wonder if that is what is really going on here. Is this really a parable about money? Clearly, there is some aspect of money in this text. Clearly, something is being said here. Clearly, there is some expectation on how we use money. Clearly, there is something about the way we care for, manage, invest our money, the money that is entrusted to us. But I wonder if there's something else going on here. I wonder if something else is at work. A couple of weeks ago, I fell into a really odd discussion about pasta with a friend of mine on the phone. We were talking about the sort of meals that we were having. We were talking about pasta, and I told him that I really enjoyed eating gnocchi. And I told him that, of course, the advantage of gnocchi is when there's a pandemic and the shelves are completely emptied of pasta, the one thing you can guarantee that's left on the shelf is gnocchi. And he said to me, "Yeah, that's all very well, but do you eat gnocchi because of its flavor, or do you eat it because it's a good way of mopping up the sauce that carries the true flavor?" Good question. And when I read this parable, I wonder whether we could ask the same question. I wonder whether this parable is actually about money, or whether money is the thing that carries the message that we are supposed to see. I wonder whether this parable of Jesus is much more complex than we give it credit for. For example, what are we to make of the manager who's been accused of wasting the employer's resources and then commits fraud by changing the records so the debt appears less than it actually is? And what are we to make of the master's reaction when, rather than condemn his employer for fraud, he actually commends him for being shrewd? What are we to make of the manager's, or is it actually Jesus' words, when he says, for the people of this world are more shrewd in dealing with their own kind than the people of the light? And what are we to make of Jesus' words that whoever can be trusted with very little can be trusted with much, and whoever is dishonest with little is dishonest with will be dishonest with much? When the focus of this parable is on a man who acts dishonestly to save both his job and by trying to gain favor and make friends by effectively buying them, was the man in the parable honest or dishonest? He was certainly being accused of wasting the resources that had been given but entrusted to him. And certainly the debts that he writes off are significant. But was he dishonest, or did he just not know what he was doing? Was it dishonesty or a lack of business acumen that put him in this position? And what are we to make of the fact that the manager effectively bought friends by reducing the debts owed to his master? When you start looking at this, when you start digging a bit deeper, it seems it starts to get a bit more complex than first reading. Maybe there's a reflection on life here, that actually life is often not quite what it seems. I remember early in my ministry visiting a couple in their home. It was a couple who used to arrive at church in a relatively new car. They were always well-dressed and always well-spoken. I thing is, when I visited them and was welcomed into their living room, I started to notice things. There were no photos, no pictures, no artwork on the walls. They had a dresser, one of these Welsh dressers, but nothing on it. No ornaments, no crockery. The carpets were threadbare. And when I was served tea, it was in chipped mugs. I wonder what was going on there. There was a disconnect to this family arriving on a Sunday and what they were really like. And I sat in their home and drank their tea and listened to their stories. I wonder if there's something of that going on in this parable. I wonder if that experience resonates with this parable. Now, some scholars will tell you, will seek to square the circle of the master commending the servant for his unscrupulous conduct by simply arguing the fact that all the servant was actually doing was cutting off his own commission, was just reducing the debt, so actually it's him who's suffering and not the master. If he is cutting his own commission, all I can say is he gets a lot of commission. By suggesting the master's story, master is commending him for taking the cut himself. Maybe we're losing out on something. Maybe we're simply sanitizing this story because we like to think that there is honesty and integrity in this story. But what if Jesus wants us to see the dishonesty in the servant's actions? What if he wants us to see that the master commends his servant for his cleverness and his clear self-interest? What if the honesty here is not in the action, but actually in the servant, in the giving, admitting to the fact that he had made the changes? What if this parable is about authenticity rather than honesty? What if the words of Jesus, the master commended the dishonest manager because he had acted shrewdly? For the people of this world are more shrewd in dealing with their own kind than the people of the light. What if that was about authenticity? What might that say to us? What might it say to us as we function as individuals, as followers of Jesus? And more importantly, what might it say to us as a church, together as the people of God? Because authenticity is a revelation of what we really are. The definition of being authentic is to have no question about the origin. For a piece of art to be an original, to be authentic, it must come from the artist's own hand. It must not be a copy of a genuine piece of work. It must not be someone else who sort of covered up, made something look like it, and then passed it off as the artist's work. It must be from the artist's own hand. And for Christian faith to be effective, it must be the real deal. It must be authentic. Which is why, as Baptists, we have a process of interviewing for church membership. We want to talk to prospective members. We want to hear their stories. We want to hear their experiences. We want to know where they have been victorious because of their faith. And we want to know where they struggle, where they fall down, where their failures are. We want to know where Jesus has changed their lives. And we do this because we want to get a sense of them as people. And we want to get a sense of whether their story feels right. In the art world, when it comes to authenticating a piece of art or sculpture, the experts consider not only the work itself, what it looks like, they also consider the provenance, the stories that lie behind it. And they're looking always for the story that runs from the beginning, from the present day, right back, so they can take it to the artist's hand. Ultimately, their decision on whether this is a genuine sculpture or a genuine piece of art is based on the information, all the information, and a feeling of whether it feels right. Does this seem right? It leaves me wondering, how well do we know our own story? Not just as individuals, but together as a church. How well do we know our story and history as a fellowship? The things that over years we have struggled with as a congregation. And I don't mean just over the last 50 years. I mean over the last 300 years in the case of us as a fellowship here in this place. And it leads me to wonder, if we were to gaze into a mirror, the mirror of our past, what we might actually discover about who we are as a people, who we are as a church. In the case of the servant, he was dishonest, but at least he was authentic about it. We can never really know whether he did waste the master's possessions. But in the light of Jesus' description of his actions following his accusation, we might consider he was genuinely dishonest, but at least being authentic to himself. We see something of this in the way that he realizes that he's not going to get a job after he's sacked as manager, that he's not going to be able to do a physical piece of work because he's too weak to dig, and he certainly doesn't like the idea of begging. And so he goes out and he uses his dishonesty to buy friends and influence people. People who will help him when he needs it. There'll be favors to call in, markers to pull in. In effect, he is building what's known as social capital. Now, at its most basic, social capital is a network of relationships that business or organizations create around themselves to help themselves function. In the case of a church, it relates to the relationships we have with other churches and with other outside bodies. And social capital is vital because it helps get things done. If you want an example of that, we might look at the network of relationships that ITAC have formed over these past 2 years. A network of relationship that enables them to do amazing things with the homeless of our community, of our city. Things that without the support of churches, charities, local councils, all working together would be absolutely impossible. And here in the parable that Jesus tells, we find a manager making social capital by reducing the debt of those who are indebted to his master, so that when the time's needed, he will have something to call on. But does this mean that the end justifies the means? Because in telling this story, the manager is clearly buying the favor of others at the cost, not of himself, but his employer. And so I have to ask, is Jesus commending the dishonest actions of the servant simply because he is being authentic? And because his authenticity has acted meant he has acted authentically when he buys friends? Is this what Jesus is saying? If it is, I'm not sure it sits well with me. And if it does, it doesn't sit well with me, because I've seen this sort of thing happen in churches. I've seen where fellowships come together ostensibly to work together to create something new in the community. And yet the true reason for them to coming together is never revealed. Each church lies to the other, in effect. And they've created an environment where not only did they not tell the truth to one another, but they've completely lost sight of what the truth actually was. Yes, they were being authentic to themselves. But were they being authentic as followers of Jesus? Was their faith, was their discipleship authentic? I hope not. I hope that's not what we're seeing. My hope is that when Jesus invites us to become authentic followers of him, that our lives change. That actually, the way we act is different. But it's no less authentic because it reveals something deep down that has become who we are, that new, transformed life. We're not simply being authentic to our human selves. Our human self-seeking, self-centered selves, we become authentic followers of Jesus. That's my hope. But in respecting my hope, I'm reminded that God sometimes is bigger than this. Paul, when he writes his letter to Philippi, he addresses the accusation that there are some people in Rome, who are preaching the gospel simply because they benefit themselves. And Paul writes, and the people at Philippi are complaining, and Paul writes and says, what does it matter? The important thing is in every way, whether from false or true motives, Christ is preached. And because of this, I rejoice. So with the two churches that came together dishonestly, were they being authentic to themselves? Yes, probably yes. Were they being authentic in such a way that the gospel was being proclaimed? Well, I guess that was their intention. And were lives changed as a result of their authenticity? I'm not so sure about that. While they were certainly being authentic to who they were as human beings, I'm not sure they were being authentic followers of Jesus. And so when I read this parable, when I read this story that Jesus presents, it becomes much more complex. It seems to be Jesus is speaking more about being authentic than he is about speaking about money. Sure, there is a content here that relates to money. There is a context about investing in friends, investing in organizations, investing our money in such a way that it pays dividends later for the kingdom of God. Sure, there is something in this parable about managing resources. But I wonder whether there's a deeper issue here, an issue of authenticity. And it asks a question of us, what is it to be an authentic follower of Jesus? What is it like to allow Jesus' words and actions to shape our lives? To be truly authentic? Surely we need to discover who we actually are and what that will mean in the work of the kingdom. Back in 2004, the BBC began a new television series called Who Do You Think You Are? The premise of the story quite simple, is that they would take a celebrity, someone well known, and they would look into their history, and they would follow a story or a character from their past. It's become such a success that they're now in their 19th series to date. And maybe the success is because it's each time the celebrity discovers something that they didn't know about their past. Some things about their past are really exciting, and it lifts them, and it buoys them, and it gives them energy. And there are other bits that they're not so keen on, the dark parts of their story. But whatever is the case, when we get to the end of the program, each person sees how their ancestors' story has shaped their lives and makes them the sort of person they are today with the values they have today. I can't help but wondering what would happen if we were to look at our ancestors. those who worshipped and kept the faith in this place before us. My guess is there would be lots to encourage us. But my guess is we'd find a shock or two along the way as well. My guess is that while we might find, while we might like some of what we see, there would be bits that we would be not so sure about. But I wonder if knowing and accepting who we are, we might have a better idea of what our mission is in this part of Cambridge. I wonder if we'd asked ourselves who we really are, we might find a way of becoming truly authentic as a group of believers, as a church. This parable ends with Jesus says, no servant can serve two masters. Either you will hate one or love the other. You will be devoted to one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. Clearly, money is important in this story. But I wonder whether there's something else here as well. I wonder whether there's an authenticity about being questioned here. If we were to read on a little, we would find that the question is being posed of the Pharisees, the key religious people of the day. And therefore, I wonder if the question being posed of authenticity is one of us as the people of God. To enable our eyes to be opened as individuals and together as a church to what it might be to be genuine followers of Jesus, building on the strengths and the weaknesses of those who have gone before us. I wonder if we were to look at who we are with a critical eye and to see as if for the first time and to admit our strengths and our weaknesses. Whilst that might be a bit of a shock for us, maybe, just maybe, it might help us to be authentic. And being authentic, maybe, God might be able to use us more ably in his ministry and mission. I wonder. Amen.